A man gets kidnapped by deprogrammers who are convinced he's in a cult. He's not. He's just a guy who wanted a steady paycheck and maybe a rebound after a bad breakup. That is literally how this story begins. Welcome to Copilot Podcasts. Today, we are diving into the Dobie Pokorny saga, 5 books by author William Arthur Holmes that follow one man through cults, international espionage, corporate bioweapons conspiracies, a lottery-funded presidential campaign, and an encounter with a little blue alien. By the end of this episode, you'll know exactly who Dobie Pokorny is, why his story works as a 5-book saga, and what makes this particular kind of everyman character so compelling. I've got someone here who has gone deep on all 5 books, and I want to start with the most basic question possible. Who is Dobie Pokorny?
So Dobie Pokorny is the central character across all 5 books, and the saga is described as an episodic journey, 5 books stitched together by William Arthur Holmes. And the thing that defines Dobie from the very first page of the first book is that he is not trying to be a hero. He is not seeking adventure. He just wants normal things.
Right, like a paycheck.
Exactly, a paycheck, a rebound, a quiet life. And the universe just keeps saying, no, actually, here's a cult, here's a spy, here's a bioweapons company, here's an alien. And Dobie keeps getting dragged along.
That is such a specific kind of misery. Like, he's not unlucky in a tragic way. He's unlucky in a way that is almost cosmically absurd.
That's exactly the tone of the saga. It's described across the books as fast and funny, tense and twist-driven, sharp. There's real stakes, but there's also this consistent thread of chaos that follows Dobie everywhere he goes.
Okay, so let's actually walk through this, because 5 books is a lot of ground to cover. Where does it all start?
Book 1 is called Temporary Insanity, and the setup is almost deceptively simple. Dobie is in his 20s, living in Los Angeles, bouncing between temp jobs. He's just come out of a brutal breakup, and he wants 2 things, a steady paycheck and maybe a rebound.
Very reasonable. Very achievable goals.
You would think. What he gets instead is Vanelia. She's described as a receptionist with a 1,000-yard stare, a cult on speed dial, and a talent for dragging him into trouble. And one innocent night out with her turns into a missing car, a torched workplace, and Dobie being kidnapped by deprogrammers.
Wait, the deprogrammers think he's the cult member?
They think he's the cult member. He's not. He just had the bad luck of getting close to Vanelia. And it escalates from there. By the time he limps home, Vanelia has taken his entire apartment building hostage and is threatening to blow it sky high.
That is an extraordinary amount of damage for one relationship.
And here's the detail that really gets me. While all of this is happening, Dobie takes refuge with a friend of a friend, completely unaware that his new host is the leader of Vanelia's cult. The group is called the Dynamos.
He ran from the cult directly into the cult leader's house.
That is Dobie's entire life in one sentence, honestly. And the book is described as launching the saga with cults, chaos, mistaken identity, and one man's accidental journey into a world far stranger than he ever imagined. Which, given what comes next, is saying something.
Okay, so what does come next? Because I feel like after the cult hostage situation, most people would just move somewhere quiet.
Dobie does try to move on. But book 2, Operation Detour, opens with him having what might be the worst week in fictional history. He gets fired from his job. He discovers his girlfriend doing porn with her ex. And then he gets handed a fatal diagnosis.
All in 1 week.
All in 1 week. And that's when Reva enters the picture. She's described as a stunning Black Ops trainee, and her boss, a man named Serge, has one directive: turn Dobie into an asset. For Reva, it's supposed to be an easy win.
It's never an easy win with Dobie.
Never. And here's the moment that I think perfectly captures who Dobie is as a character. He decides to fly to Kuala Lumpur. And his reason? Because it sounds cool.
That is the most chaotic travel motivation I have ever heard.
Right? And Reva follows him there, nudging him toward a mission he never agreed to. Then there's one small explosion, one Malaysian jail cell, and one guilty conscience later, Reva breaks him out. And that's when Serge unleashes his global hit squad.
A global hit squad, because he flew somewhere because it sounded cool.
The page content describes them dodging assassins from Kuala Lumpur to Phuket. And the book frames them as unlikely partners in survival, improvisation, and questionable life choices. Taking down Serge wasn't part of the plan, but neither was falling for each other.
So there's a romance in the middle of all the assassin dodging.
There is. And the book ends on this really interesting note. When the dust settles and the money runs out, they're left with the hardest mission of all. What comes next? Which is such a grounded question after everything they've been through.
I love that. The international spy thriller ends with two people going, okay, but now what do we actually do with our lives?
Exactly. And that question kind of hangs over book three as well, because Dobie's answer is Nashville. Quiet IT job, quiet marriage, quiet life.
Oh no.
Oh no is right. Book three is called Dobie's Dilemma, and the page content says he swore he was done with chaos. Nashville seemed like the perfect place to disappear, but his employer, a bioweapons giant called Le Havre Research, has other plans.
He works for a bioweapons company.
He does. And when he's sent to troubleshoot what's described as a routine problem at a remote lab, he walks straight into a nightmare. His boss is suddenly hospitalized, his co-worker is nearly killed, and a woman named Darla, described as the only friendly face in the building, is desperate to blow the whistle on what the company is really doing behind locked doors.
And Dobie gets pulled in.
Before he can run, she pulls him into a conspiracy that gets them both shoved into witness protection. And the book describes it as a story about corporate secrets, forced loyalties, and one man who keeps trying to escape trouble, only to find it waiting for him every time.
That last line is doing a lot of work. That's basically the thesis of the entire saga.
It really is. And what makes book three interesting is that Dobie doesn't even want to be the whistleblower. Darla resurfaces weeks later with a dangerous proposition: leave protection and help her expose Le Havre once and for all. And the page content says Dobie wants nothing to do with it. But the truth has a way of dragging him back.
There's something almost frustrating about that in the best way. Like, he keeps making the right choice even when he desperately doesn't want to.
That's a really good way to put it. He's not a reluctant hero in the classic sense. He's more like a reluctant, decent person. He keeps doing the right thing, not because he's brave, but because he can't quite bring himself to look away.
Okay, so after witness protection, after the bioweapons company, after all of that, what does the universe throw at Dobie next?
He wins the lottery. $300 million.
Okay, finally some good news.
The page content actually says that winning $300 million would be a finish line for most people. For Dobie, it's the starting gun.
Oh no. What does he do with it?
He runs for president. Instead of buying a mansion or disappearing to an exotic locale, he launches what the book describes as the most improbable presidential run in American history, fueled by cash, conviction, and a stubborn belief that he can save the country from the very people running it.
I mean, honestly, that tracks. That is exactly what Dobie would do.
It completely tracks. And the moment he announces, powerful enemies take notice. Some want to control him, others want him gone, and more than a few think his campaign should end permanently. The threats escalate from smear jobs to assassination attempts.
And what does Dobie say about all of this?
He says, and this is a direct quote from the page content, "I'll retire when I'm dead." And the book notes he says this, unaware of how many people are working overtime to make that happen.
That is a great line. That is genuinely a great line.
Book four is described as a sharp, fast-moving political thriller about an ordinary man with extraordinary luck taking on a system that would rather see him buried than elected. And the saga describes it as ending badly. The presidential run does not go well.
So he loses the fortune, loses the campaign, and then what? What's left?
Book five. Another way. And this is where the saga gets really interesting, because Dobie has lost his fortune, his patience, and what the page content describes as any remaining faith in corporate America. And his response is to write a manifesto.
A manifesto.
Called Another Way Beyond the Status Quo. It's described as a blistering call out of the powerful. And when his boss at a company called Sayencorp, a man named Colonel Charon, discovers it, Dobie is fired on the spot and marked as a problem that needs to be dealt with.
So he writes a manifesto and immediately loses his job over it.
And instead of backing down, he hits the road on what the page content calls a truth to power speaking tour, which is very on brand for Dobie at this point. He has been through cults, international espionage, bioweapons whistleblowing, and a presidential assassination attempt. He is not backing down from a colonel.
Fair point. So who does he meet on this speaking tour?
Two very different characters. The first is Kaylee. She's described as sharp, grounded, and far too good for the mess he's dragging behind him. And the page content says they both assume the other is out of their league, but the connection is instant and undeniable.
That's actually really sweet.
It is. And together they become unlikely fugitives, dodging Sharon's operatives as the stakes escalate from corporate retaliation. But then there's the second character, and this is where the saga takes a genuinely unexpected turn.
The alien.
Semi. A little blue alien with mysterious motives. And the page content says Semi's sudden appearances suggest Dobie's fight may be bigger than he ever imagined. The saga's overview actually describes the universe, or at least its representative in the form of Semi, as not being particularly helpful.
An unhelpful alien. That's a very specific kind of cosmic disappointment.
It really is. And what I find fascinating about Semi's introduction in the final book is what it does to the entire saga retroactively. Suddenly, Dobie's improbable string of disasters and survivals starts to feel less like random bad luck and more like something the universe was orchestrating all along.
Oh, that's a really interesting read. Like, the chaos wasn't random, it was preparation.
Exactly. And the book is described as the heartfelt culmination of Dobie's journey, a story about choosing love, growth, and refusing to let the world or its oligarchs decide who you get to become. And the final line of the book's description is, sometimes the universe sends help from the strangest places.
And how does it end? Like, does Dobie actually get a win?
The saga's overview says that Kaylee is the first thing in his universe that actually makes sense. And for once, it doesn't end badly. Mostly.
Mostly. That word is doing so much work.
It's the most Dobie word possible. Even his happy ending comes with a caveat.
I want to go back to something you said earlier about Dobie being a reluctant, decent person rather than a reluctant hero, because I think that's actually what makes this saga work across five books. He's not growing into some kind of chosen one. He's just persistently himself.
That's exactly it. And the saga is structured in a way that reflects that. Each book strips away something Dobie thought was stable. His relationship in book one, his health and his sense of safety in book two, his quiet life in book three, his fortune in book four, and in book five, even his faith in the systems around him. And yet he keeps going.
Which is either inspiring or deeply concerning, depending on your perspective.
Probably both. And I think that tension is part of what makes the saga compelling. You're never quite sure if Dobie is going to be okay. The page content is very clear that things end badly, repeatedly. The overview literally says, unsurprisingly, that ends badly too about the presidential run.
There's something almost refreshing about that. A lot of stories promise that if you just keep going, everything works out. This one seems to say, things might keep going wrong, and you keep going anyway.
And the final book really leans into that. The manifesto Dobie writes, Another Way Beyond the Status Quo, is described as a blistering call out of the powerful. He's not just surviving at that point. He's trying to articulate something. He's trying to make sense of everything that's happened to him.
Which is what the saga's overview says, too, that he's trying to make sense of the universe. And then the universe sends him an alien who is, by all accounts, not very helpful.
Right. And there's something genuinely funny about that. Dobie goes looking for cosmic meaning and gets Semi, a little blue alien with mysterious motives who shows up and doesn't really clarify anything.
That's kind of the most honest thing a story about meaning-making could do. The universe doesn't explain itself. It just sends a small blue alien and wishes you luck.
And speaking of things the universe sends, there's actually a funny real-world detail in the page content about this saga. There's a co-pilot AI introduction that was created for it, but it had to be truncated because the AI voice kept pronouncing the author's name, Holmes, as Homie.
Wait, that's in the actual page content?
It is. The page content literally notes it was truncated because the female voice started pronouncing Holmes as Homie, which is a very specific kind of AI failure.
That's kind of perfect for a saga about things going wrong in unexpected ways. Even the promotional material had its own Dobie moment.
Exactly. William Arthur Holmes creates a character whose life is defined by things going sideways in ways no one could have predicted. And then the AI narrating the introduction to that character's story mispronounces his own name. There's a poetry to that.
Okay, so when you step back from all five books, the cults, the spies, the bioweapons, the lottery, the presidential run, the manifesto, the alien, what does the Dobie Pokorny saga actually add up to?
I think it's a portrait of what it looks like to keep choosing engagement over retreat. Every single time Dobie has the option to walk away, and he always has that option, something pulls him back. Not ambition, not heroism, just this inability to look away from what's actually happening.
And the saga rewards that, eventually. Mostly.
Mostly. K. Cayley is described as the first thing in his universe that actually makes sense. And that's a significant payoff for someone who has been through everything Dobie has been through. The chaos doesn't stop. Sharon's operatives are still out there. Semi is still being cryptically unhelpful. But Dobie has something real.
Here's what this really comes down to, I think. The Dobie Pokorny saga is 5 books about a man who never wanted to be remarkable and ended up being exactly that. Not because he sought it out, but because he kept showing up. He went from temp jobs in L.A. to a cult hostage situation, from a Malaysian jail cell to witness protection, from a lottery win to a presidential assassination attempt, and finally to a speaking tour with a manifesto and an alien. And through all of it, the thing that defines him is not his luck, which is genuinely terrible, but his persistence.
And the saga is structured so that each book builds on that. The episodic format means you can follow Dobie through each phase of his life, his 20s in L.A., his international detour, his Nashville chapter, his political moment, his road trip reckoning, and each one feels complete while also feeding into the larger arc. William Arthur Holmes has built something that works both as individual stories and as a cumulative portrait.
And the final book's description really does feel like a culmination. Choosing love, growth, and refusing to let the world or its oligarchs decide who you get to become. That's not just Dobie's story, that's a pretty universal one.
Which is probably why the saga works across 5 books. Dobie is specific enough to be a real character, his bad luck is particular, his choices are his own, but the underlying question he's wrestling with is one most people recognize. What do you do when the world keeps throwing things at you that you didn't ask for?
And his answer, apparently, is write a manifesto, hit the road, and hope the alien is on your side.
And find Cayley. Don't forget Cayley.
The first thing in his universe that actually makes sense. That's a beautiful note to end on. Remember where we started? A man getting kidnapped by deprogrammers who thought he was in a cult, when really he just wanted a paycheck and a rebound. He ends the saga dodging a colonel's operatives on a speaking tour, with a manifesto, a partner, and a little blue alien whose motives remain mysterious. The universe had plans for Dobie Pokorny. He just didn't get the memo. That's the Dobie Pokorny saga, 5 books by William Arthur Holmes. Thanks for listening to Copilot Podcasts.